is something that you have to be careful about. And now, as the subject is memory, we don't want to forget what the subject is. The man who suffered from amnesia went to his doctor and said, "I have an amnesia, doctor." The doctor said, "How long have you had it?" The man said, "Had what?" So anyway, this morning we're going to deal with the problem of memory. It is one of the most important and wonderful faculties that we possess, and like most of our assets, can become one of our worst liabilities. Most people are trying to forget something, and today memory is a nagging conscience. Memory is something that reminds us of our own mistakes. Memory helps us to remember times that were better than now. All kinds of tricks are played by memory, but I think the Pythagoreans had the real answer to the problem. They call this answer retrospection. And retrospection is thinking backwards. It is the process of thinking of what has happened rather than worrying about what will happen. The Pythagoreans took it for granted that if the things that have happened are right, the things that will happen will be right also. On the other hand, we have to grow. And Lord Bacon pointed out that growth has historical outline. We know the memory of the rocks, where by stratification we are able to estimate the age of continents and the great volcanic cataclysms that have occurred. We know the record that's kept to the rings of trees, some of which are nearly 5,000 years old. We know the memory that is found in all the different climates and countries of the world, histories. Histories that are recorded in ruins today, histories that are remembered through the pyramids, the sphinxes, and the great temples that have gradually crumbled away. All of these have to do with memory. We can remember, and we also know that from the beginning human beings have wanted to be remembered. They wish to leave some monument of themselves. We have this today. People of today are building things they hope will bear witness to them after they are gone. Everywhere, memory becomes an invitation to enrich the future by the wisdom of the past. Lord Bacon points out that it is a mistake to assume that memory is a disaster. Memory is part of an equipment we have been given to use. Most persons have a tendency to abuse memory. They have a tendency to remember the worst that ever happened to them. They remember the mistakes of their friends and the injustices that they have suffered. Very few people very carefully remember the mistakes that they have made. They are victims of something else. There was some other reason why they made a wrong move at a certain time. Actually, memory is a key to all that has happened to us in the embodiment which we now occupy. And whether we realize it or not, previous embodiments are etched into the very substance of our present consciousness. We are what we are today because of what we have been. We will be tomorrow what we are today, plus the experiences that we accept. The warrior misuses memory. The individual who continually meditates upon the miseries of the past, that individual also abuses memory. We abuse memory when we keep up feuds, when we are unable to mingle with people on a friendly basis. We remember grievances, dishonesties, mistakes, and always try to blame them on someone else. Actually, as Pythagoras pointed out, memory should be a careful rehearsal in reverse of our own daily thinking. The day flows from dawn to dark. Retrospection goes from dark back to dawn. It gives us a different perspective on the various problems that have come to us through the day. In other words, retrospection is a kind of digestion and assimilation of a day's work. It is something that we use each day to bring into order of consciousness and of understanding the various large and small situations that have arisen in the previous 12 hours. We can remember the phone call and the interruption. We can remember when the phone call was a wrong number and we were irritated. We can remember when the wrong person comes to see us. We can remember also all the gossip about neighbors, friends, associates. We can also meditate upon the fallacies of policy and also upon the dishonesty of everything and everyone. And we can build for ourselves a nice negative day. Now, when we have this all accumulated in one place, we will gradually discover that it is chronic. To start this type of attitude is to become a victim of it before it's all over. Once we can make a complete pattern of negation, we have to live with it. And Pythagoras pointed out that the answer was to solve the problem within the day in which it occurs. So we said a crossword. We were unpleasant to a child. We had a bit of gossip with a neighbor. We shared some choice beliefs of our own where they were not specially welcome. All these things made up the day. So we have to settle back now and see what we did wrong, why we were wrong, and why we should have acted differently. And if there's any possibility of redress, why we should make it as quickly as we can. So we will learn gradually to realize that most of our troubles originate in ourselves. Why, we are either the cause of a difficulty or we accept one without due consideration for values. One of the most common memories today is gossip. And gossip is a very cruel thing because it usually gradually increases by repetition and by distribution until some small factor or circumstance becomes hopelessly overburdened with meanings. We therefore try to avoid that. If by any chance we have said something unkind, we have done something at least minutely dishonest, these things should be corrected. And we should gradually realize through each day the workings of universal law. We should know each day that the laws of life are operating. And our problem is to reconcile our own mistakes with the universal processes which make up life. If we can succeed in doing this, we will find each day we grow. Each day we come a little nearer to the fulfillment of our own integrities. Pythagoras also pointed out in his thinking that where we had a mistake, maybe it is impossible to correct that mistake. Words spoken cannot be taken back. Actions that are destructive may not be saved or amended. So we have to take another attitude. We have to say, if I cannot compensate the person or situation, then I must make a new, better situation as a compensation. If we have had trouble with someone and that person has passed on 20 years ago and the grievance is still kept up, then it is our problem to make a new friendship in the name of that person, to have a better relationship with someone now to pay for the poor relationship we had in the past. In all various situations where we are wrong, if we cannot right them with the person involved, we must right them in principle the next time a situation arises in which they can be used. Every apology may be an opportunity to pay tribute to a mistake we made in the past. We may not be able to correct that mistake, but we can do something right in the name of it. So wherever we go along through life, we have a memory that has to be trained. Today, our most common remark is, forget it. And probably people mean that. But in fact, substance, in essence, we don't forget it. Anything that should be forgotten is etched in the memory with great depth. We really don't want to forget it. We want to nurse the grievance. We want to be abused. We want to blame someone for something. So the saying, forget it, simply means that we want someone to forget our mistake, but not to correct it in ourselves. To forget even something that happens to us is a waste, because things have meaning. What happens to us is important. And if we try to forget everything that is unpleasant, the main purpose of life is destroyed. Actually, we are not here necessarily just to have fun. The fun generation is gradually wearing out. It didn't last very long because it had no real legitimate existence. We are not here merely to enjoy the privileges of life. We are here to share in both the privileges and the responsibilities. It is our moral duty to accept the fact that we have duties to perform, that we have a role to play, that we have a life to live, and that this life can be important. And the more important we make it to others, the more important it becomes to ourselves. I know a lot of people who think that the end of life is to escape responsibility, to do as they please, to have fun, and to ignore the world to which they belong and which they attempt to escape from. Now, several types of people attempt this. Some honestly and sincerely believe that they do not need to partake of anything that they don't agree with. Well, if you do not agree with something, just to ignore it is not the answer either. If there is something you can do to improve that something that worries you, then it is your duty also to accept it. It is the duty of every person to be busy, to be doing things that within their own capacities are important. And mostly the things that are important to others should take preference. The idea that we are therefore intended simply to live on the surface of existence is not true. And the consequences of this type of life are at least boredom and gradually a sense of surfeit. The life is no longer valuable, important, or meaningful. It is like a vacation. A vacation every year is a blessing. A perpetual vacation is a curse. The individual loses values. We have to be busy growing. And the most important thing in this world is to grow. It is to correct the mistakes of the past and not repeat them. It is to overcome the prejudices which have influenced our thinking. It is to free ourselves of the small things that do not count and make arrangements in our time patterns for the big things that do count. So we are here always, as the Greeks believed, because of necessity. And one of the early Greek philosophers said that the world turns on the spindle of necessity. Everything is moved by a need. There is something important waiting for every person. They must even sometimes draw back a little because it comes too fast. But certainly there is something that is needed to each life. Whatever we are at the moment is less than we can be in the next moment. We are here definitely to do things that improve ourselves and protect our way of life. If we leave any of this to others, we will be in the same fix that we are now in politically. When we hire people and pay them exorbitant prices to do our thinking for us, all they will do is think us out of everything we have. We know this. Also, we know that we cannot depend upon others who are untested to prove valuable to us in a moment of necessity. Each individual must share to the best of his ability in making things better for himself and his world. he must also use memory. Because memory is a record of things as they have been and as they are. Memory is an unwritten descent of facts. Memories bring us to understand the laws of cause and effect. They help us to see the mistakes of the past. If we try to blot these out, forget it, idea, we keep on making the same mistakes. The same laws operate, and the same tragedies are repeated. It is necessary for the person who comes into this world to leave it better than he found it. And this is true not only of civilization, but of himself. He must pass out of this life a better person than he was when he came in. If there is nothing between the cradle and the grave except the effort to enjoy oneself, there is not much progress. And in the large pattern of things, we are here to progress, not merely for enjoyment. There is, of course, a philosophical explanation for this, namely that doing what is right should be the source of the greatest joy. It would be if we really understood the laws of nature. If we realized that the fulfillment of truth gives us the greatest possible sense of achievement. If we can realize that, we can gradually get our pleasures and our joys out of growing rather than out of indolence. We have long considered an individual to be most fortunate who does the least. He has servants, secretaries. He has all kinds of help. He doesn't raise his hand to anything much except maybe a game of golf occasionally. The fact that he does nothing is a symbol of his success. This is just not true. The individual who does nothing remains inferior to the person who does something. And the idea that we are here to create so many body comforts, and so many luxuries, that we are completely free from work, have no sense of duty, and have no part in the restoration of society. This type of success is a fallacy, and we know it, we see it. Memory tells us it is. Our own memory tells us of the small examples in our own living. And through the longer memory of history, we see how nations have risen and fallen. Today, history is more or less complete. We know pretty much the history of the last 10,000 years. We know its problems, and we're rather amazed when we sit down and realize that the mistakes that were made by the Phoenicians, Babylonians, and Chaldeans are being repeated today with great emphasis and on a much larger scale. The very mistakes that buried the past and of which we have proper record are being repeated, and repeated on a larger and more elaborate scale because of the fact that we have more privileges and opportunities. Therefore, unless we use memory, we have no valid check. We have no way of knowing just what luxury does unless we have memory and its larger equivalent in history. Our history in the world today is very largely a history of mistakes. And this history of mistakes is repeated in the personal life of the individual of today. His life is very largely a problem in failure to accept or anticipate the natural processes of universal law. We create human laws, which we try to keep, but it doesn't make much difference because most of these laws are not very good anyway. But we do not follow the original laws. These code of Hammurabi, which is one of the oldest of all human codes, was accredited to the god Nebo. The Pentateuch tells us that the Ten Commandments, the Decalogue, is credited to Moses as writing out from the hand of God. All these codes were originally conceived as divinely inspired. But I think we can say with fair safety that most of our modern legislations are not divinely inspired. They are much more the effort again of the individual to evade and avoid. He is determined not to do those things which inconvenience him. He does not support the things he believes. He does not detract his attention from the things he does not believe. He just goes along trying to have fun. And as a matter of fact, in our 20th century, in the year 80s of that century, we are having the fun of about 10 or 12 wars at the same time. We are in trouble everywhere. And everyone is trying to pass a legislation. You cannot legislate human selfishness. The only thing you can do is to outgrow it. And the only way to outgrow it is to recognize it and change it. There is no possibility of fighting our way to peace. There is no way of, in any way, of accumulating our way to correct poverty. These things are in the mind of nature. They are in the papers and records that have been written to tell the story of nations, of peoples, of races. In every case, we find the same cause bringing the same result. And the temporal forms of education, the ordinary secular and religious doctrines of the people, do not change the facts because these peoples have not changed themselves. So it becomes very necessary to have memory, because memory is the one thing that, if it's used properly, can go a long way to correct the mistakes of the past. When you suggest something now that you think might help people, the first question probably will arise is, how do you know? What makes you think that would work? Why don't you try something else? The answer, again, is memory. If you make a suggestion that has worked for 10,000 years successfully, you have a fact as far as man can have a fact. But if you ignore all that has gone before and say, yes, the ancients made all these mistakes, but we have outgrown them, then we must have a hard look at ourselves and see if we have outgrown them. In most cases, we'll find we haven't. We have not any better character than the ancients, except we have more luxury and more inventions to back up our mistakes. We are still in great need of memory. We are in great need of memory if we hope for world peace, if we hope for the union of religions, if we hope for proper domestic life, if we desired our children to grow up as worthy citizens. We've got to go to memory to find out how this can be done and why we haven't done it now. It's a case of using memory, therefore, as an instrument, not merely a recording. It has to be used to demonstrate and show the way in which solutions come. We are beginning to see it in small things. We have a number of groups floating around that are trying desperately to bring home the proof of the past, that they have found how these things operated. But when you bring this to the scoffer, his answer is again, oh, forget it. Forget anything that is disagreeable, even though it's justly and well-deserved. Forget anything that interferes with fun, because fun is a very important thing. If you can have fun from the cradle to the grave, why do anything else? But if that is true, why come here at all? Why are we born into a world imperfect simply to enjoy our imperfections? Why are we here in a world full of war, having fun, but making no effort to increase in a practical way the probabilities of peace? This brings home to each person the fact that ignorance has to be considered important. Now, in colleges and universities, history is not a favorite subject. History is simply the memory of nations. History began with cuneiform tablets. History goes back to oral tradition. It goes back to the runes and the sagas. History is the story of man's growth, his coming forward out of the past into the present and drifting toward the future. In history, we find all the mistakes that have been made to date, and they are numerous. And in history, we find out how people tried to work with these mistakes. And we realize that for the most part, the mistakes triumphed, because the individual, in order to correct the mistakes, had to give up some of the fun that to him was the most important thing in the world. Instead of having a better and deeper understanding and insight, he had to simply continue having fun. Well, the Romans had fun until they couldn't do it any longer. Then along came the Goths and the Visigoths and destroyed them. Each civilization died of its own weaknesses, and it continues to suffer and struggle because of the fact these weaknesses are not corrected. Today there is a great deal of excitement over the problems of correcting the mistakes of education. There are at least 50 different records of the past of how experiments were made in education. We know how some failed and some succeeded, and we realize that in most cases the doing of the right thing was just too much of a responsibility and too much trouble to continue with. It interfered with the individual having fun. It interfered with him doing exactly as he pleased in a world where he could only do what was right and survive. All these things are in the memory of life. They are there. We can read them. They can be taught in history. There is no reason why the average school child should not be able to estimate values before he graduates from high school. He should know that the so-called virtues that we talk about are not platitudes of narrow-minded ancestors. They are the certain records of thousands of years of human effort to live and survive. And the moment these laws are ignored, the moment we no longer practice the integrities, our survival is sacrificed. So we have history as a wonderful form of written memory. We have it not only in the past, but we see the roots of tomorrow in the development of historical context. We realize that we are moving now in a historical environment and that we are following very closely a dozen systems that have perished in the past. Unless we make some corrections in what we are doing, we will also become part of history and hope that something will come along after us that will remind people of the lessons that we learned the hard way. So we know that memory is, therefore, very, very important. But then there's a great difference as to what we memorize. What most people today are memorizing only on one level of interest, economic. The individual wishes to graduate a potential lawyer, a potential doctor, or a potential technician, scientist, or a high financier of some kind. We all are studying for one purpose, and that purpose is to succeed. Now, memory tells us how that was done in the past. We know how it was accomplished. We know what happened to those who did it. We realize, if we look back into history, that the things that are important, the things that have survived, are not on those levels. The things that helped people to survive were dreams, ideals, hopes, and the martyrdom of saints. They were definitely a dream of something better than material success. That material success cannot go further than the grave, that everything we have has to be left behind, and all through the histories we find this is true. Therefore, why are we so completely satisfied to teach to our children, as higher education, ideas, concepts, and policies which have always failed and have brought down every civilization that accepted them? Memory is not working. Memory is not working in the public school system. It is not working in the local government system. And it is not working in the average private family. these factors are probably partly due to the fact that families, for the most part, and civilization in general, has never read a book on history. History was something that, to most people, was a dead subject. It's nothing but the past. It's all over. It's all gone. But we don't realize that history can reincarnate, so to say, and come down to us as a problem today. The history we have created by our mistakes is still with us and will remain with us until we change the course of action. Now, we also, in history, have records of some very notable and very wonderful people. We have the great leaders who have sought to bring to mankind a higher level of life. We know the great world teachers. We know Buddha and Moses and Confucius and Lao Tzu and Jesus, Muhammad, all the great teachers that have come to serve us. We know that almost all of them have either died martyrs or of a broken heart. They have died and left with us something that has lived, but lived a precarious existence. Most people will admit that Confucius was a wise man, but so that was China 2,600 years ago. So what? They are not prepared to face the simple fact that Confucius made as one of his closing statements in life. He says, "I can find no master, no leader, no prince, no scholar who will help to make a better world." He finally decided that he had failed. Later, a beautiful temple was built to him, and his name in great golden letters was on a plaque in the wall. But no one did the things that he suggested. He suggested that the foundation of a civilization is the family. That on all levels, political, social, economic, and spiritual, the term family is the thing we have to think about. Humanity is a family. Races are families within that larger family. Personal homes are families. And as goes the home, so goes the world. Confucius pointed out very clearly that if the home fails, if family honors are not maintained, if the integrities of parents and children are not preserved, that nation will fall. Many have fallen from this ailment. We think Confucius is a pretty wise man, so we keep on breaking all the rules of family. We are no longer able to even conceive of humanity as one family. It is a mass of fractions breaking each other, destroying each other. Yet Confucius was right. And Confucius can prove very definitely where even a little experiment in the right direction lived, and the great mass of mistakes perished together. Yet we have not learned, and we do not think of these things. Now we can say the same thing, for instance, of Muhammad. Today, the problem of Muhammad is a rather ticklish one. But if we read in the Quran, we say, in the words of the Prophet himself, "Who does not believe that Jesus of Nazareth was a prophet sent by the Lord, such a one will not enter heaven." That isn't quoted, however, in Persia and many of these countries. And incidentally, when Muhammad's little son, Ibrahim, was a child, he had a Christian nurse that was given to him by Muhammad. The boy did not live to maturity, but the all this intolerance was not part of him, part of the victorious caliphate that followed him. We look in other directions for the themes, for the various problems. We find in Buddhism a very simple answer to the whole thing. There are two quests: the quest for physical power and the quest for inner light. From inner light comes peace. From peace comes the salvation of nations. From peace comes the creation of true progress. On the other side is the life of profit, each individual trying to gain from the others, each putting his own success above the common good, and ending, as Buddha pointed out, with chaos. All these things we do know, and memory can refresh them for us. And we are in a much better position than we would be if we had to say these things only on our own. If we had to say, "This I believe," and someone else will say, "Well, this that you believe, I do not believe." But when you are able to point out a principle that is true, and point out that the ages have sustained it, that it has been proven many, many times and never disproven, then perhaps you have a strong argument to present your point. In any event, memory does all these things for us. Memory is also a way of training. Memory is the way by which we can gain control of ourselves. Memory is to stay with patterns of purpose. Memory is the individual who is not changed from his principles by some passing flurry of success. Memory is also the ability to pass judgment upon past circumstances. Memory gives us an understanding of why we may be neurotic, because we came from a poorly established family. Memory may teach us why we are what we are, but at the same time it teaches us how to get over it. It teaches us to explain our mistakes, but at the same time realize that they are mistakes and correct them. Memory also has many interesting contributions to make to art, to music, and to all of the finer things of life. Great art is always an expression of memory. We remember something that is true, something that is real, something that is beautiful, and we try to perpetuate it through the skills of our own natures. For some skill is music, for other skill is painting, some is for its sculpturing, others for architecture. But skill is always a mysterious wisdom, a wisdom based upon law. All great art is lawful. All great art is purposed. All great art is a fulfillment of the inner memories of consciousness. It is something that brings forth out of ourselves, as out of a mental or intellectual womb, beauty and truth and fineness. So we see why, in spite of all the changing tides of life, that the great architecture remains. The magnificent cathedrals still stand. The great temples, mosques, and images are still here. And even more practically and closer to us are the works of the painters and the sculptors. We still recognize the divine gift of beauty. We perpetuate it through the development of skills. But as time goes on, we have failed to understand and protect beauty. Beauty is something that can be found in memory, can be traced back as far as we want to go, and has always been what it will have to be again, an expression of the sublimity within ourselves. Beauty is the revelation of a divine truth, brought into physical expression and manifestation through the skill of the mind and the memories of the soul. These things we have to memorize. Then we see something come along that is an atrocious thing, without beauty, without form, without any existence that is meaningful, without any purpose, with nothing but a mass of deformity, and we pay a fortune for it. Why? Because it is by a name artist whose name has been built up by a broker and a good manager. It has nothing to do with value. And it is the same in all of our arts. Gradually, the loss of the soul vision within ourselves has resulted in a degeneration of the arts. When we look inside of ourselves, we remember the wrong things. We do not remember the beauty of the sunset. We remember the indignities of mankind. We do not go back again to the great causes and purposes of existence. We are satisfied to mumble around in the mistakes of our own minds. So, we see how memory gave us, in the first place, Leonardo da Vinci, and also the great painters of the Renaissance. We know how the great music came to be. The great statues were carved. Actually, one of the greatest of all sculptors was Socrates. Socrates made the statue of the three graces that stood in the Acropolis in Athens. And someone said to him, "How did you do it?" Oh, he said, "It was very simple. The graces were always in the block of marble. I only cut away the part that was not necessary." In other words, when you come into life, the dignity and greatness of life is always there. It is always hidden in the crudest forms. All we have to do is very carefully remove the part that is not necessary. And in memory, we have to do the same. We have to forget that which is meaningless. And one of, of course, the most prominent of all meaningless factors is excuses, justifications. The individual trying to prove to himself that he had the right to be wrong. This is a mistake in itself. No one has the right to be wrong. We are in a world that condones it in some cases. But no matter how our environment accepts our mistakes, we have to pay for them ultimately. We pay them for them here or hereafter. In the old days, the ancients had a very different look upon them as to the life of a man after death. They didn't have the idea that the individual was going to go to heaven or immediately dip down into some infernal region. The Greeks were of the opinion that this wasn't reasonable because there was really no one that was good enough for heaven, and actually no one that was bad enough for hell. Therefore, in order to balance it out, they could both come back here and work it out and make each other miserable or happy according to the wealth and strength of their own characters. The good person coming back has a good life. The poor person who had a bad life comes back with a bad life. But all things are paid out in terms of law, order, and integrity. Now, as soon as we become aware of integrity as a fact in life, we can begin to search for it in the literature of the past. And it might be well to remember that a search thus carefully conducted might be more profitable to all concerned than a lifetime dedicated to TV. Because in TV, there are very few truths. In TV, all circumstances are tempered for profit. They are made to fasten the mind of the viewer upon the product that the sponsor is selling. This is also the general practice in life. The TV is merely a very advanced example. We are all surrounded constantly by the inducements to compromise ourselves for the benefit of the advertiser. Well, we may need his product, but we also must not forget that there is a whole world beyond the advertiser. The great banks, the great stock brokerages, all the great tires of industry and economy, all end when the individual lies down in the grave. When the grave closes over him, all these things belong to someone else. And yet, what does he take with him? What can he take with him if he has never had anything on his mind but profit? If he has always been a competitor from the cradle to the grave and he is suddenly in a place where there is no competition, what does he do? He has no right or no thought for his own future. In the days of my esteemed grandmother, the Wellesley was quite an important college. And in it, the young ladies of distinction were given training. Among the trainings which they received were languages. they were taught basic French, and possibly a touch of basic German. They were supposed to have mastered basic English before they even got there. And then on the side, they could go into specialist languages to include Italian or whatever they wanted to. But they always took a language to, when they went to travel. When they decided that they were going to do the great tour that was the final symptom or symbol of social elegance,